For over 350 years, the greatest minds on earth tried to solve Fermat's last theorem using, well, pure mathematics.
Right.
And then they sold chalkboards, wrote volumes of proofs, and, basically drove themselves to the brink of madness.
Oh, absolutely.
But what if they failed for centuries because Fermat's last theorem isn't actually a math problem at all?
That is the big question.
What if it's actually a broken chemical reaction vibrating at infinite heat?
Yeah, and that perspective, it completely upends how we are taught to look at numbers.
Right.
Instead of, treating variables as just abstract symbols on a page, this whole approach forces us to look at them as physical components.
Like actual objects.
Exactly. Components that are desperately trying to bond, just searching for a stable state in a really harsh thermodynamic environment.
And that is our mission for this deep dive. We are looking at this brilliant set of source notes and these adversarial Q&As titled FLT Missing Bonding Logic per Lindholm.txt.
It's a fascinating document.
It really is. We are going to entirely rewire how you look at polynomials, at equations, and specifically at Fermat's last theorem by viewing them through this thermodynamic framework known as ODE CCT.
Yeah.
Okay, let's unpack this because, I mean, if we're going to treat mathematics like a physical chemistry lab, we really have to define what the chemicals even are in the first place.
Right. We have to start with the core mapping of this framework. So in standard high school math, your variables, your X, Y, and Z, they're just unknown quantities waiting to be found.
Just empty boxes.
Exactly. But in this chemical view, they are reactive physical components. They actually have valency.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they have specific binding sites that are determined by their exponents.
So an equation like x plus y equals z that isn't just a statement of equality.
Not at all. I mean, an equation is a strict set of reaction conditions.
Right.
It's the environmental constraint that dictates exactly what must physically balance for a reaction to actually occur. So when your algebra teacher told you to, factor a polynomial.
Right, the worst part of algebra.
Yeah, exactly. You weren't just rearranging letters. In this framework, factoring is literally the act of bond breaking or bond formation.
You are taking these raw reactive ingredients and trying to find an internal architecture where they can actually connect.
Exactly.
And if you find the roots of the equation, like the actual solutions, what does that represent chemically?
You've created a stable, collapsed compound. The components have locked together, there are no unattached binding sites left, and the reaction is just over. The system is finally at peace.
That makes so much sense. And the source notes actually structure this entire walkthrough around the different steps of the ODE CCT framework
They do, yeah.
to really understand how an equation settles into peace, how entropy and stability determine these mathematical solutions. We need to walk through the three steps of this cycle.
Right. Entropy, work, and collapse.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Let's start with step one, entropy. The notes refer to this as H of T. Now, in physical chemistry, temperature is, well, molecular movement, physical heat. What on earth is temperature in a math equation?
So in the ODE CCT framework, entropy is defined as semantic uncertainty.
Semantic
Think
uncertainty.
of it as the sheer chaos of the bonding configuration. The temperature here isn't, physical heat you can measure with a thermometer.
Yeah.
It's the uncertainty of whether a stable bond even exists in the system at all.
So if an equation has countless possible pathways, but no clear structural answer, it's basically running hot.
Yes.
Yeah.
It has massive semantic uncertainty. It's a high entropy environment, kind of like a room full of floating, repelling magnets just chaotically bouncing off one another.
That sounds exhausting.
It is. Which brings us to the second step of the framework, which is work or energy.
This would be the computational cost, right?
Exactly.
Like the actual effort required to move through the endless space of numbers to try and force those magnets to finally connect.
Yeah, it's the activation energy. It is the mathematical labor required to push the reaction forward and test all those potential bonding pathways. And if that work is successful, if the structural logic holds up, you reach the third and final step, which is collapse.
The Holy
The
Grail.
holy grail,
Yeah.
exactly. Finding a stable bonding structure, the root. This is where the system reaches its absolute lowest energy state. The semantic uncertainty vanishes, and the entropy collapses entirely to zero.
Wait, I actually want to push back on this idea of equations having high or low energy states for a second.
Okay, sure.
If factoring is the equivalent of forming stable bonds, does that mean a standard expanded polynomial like x squared plus 2xy plus y squared
Right.
is basically an excited high-energy molecule freaking out before it settles.
That is exactly what it is. Think about the structure of an expanded polynomial. It's completely spread out.
Yeah.
The internal connections haven't been fully resolved into a compact form yet, so
yeah.
it is absolutely in an excited high-energy state.
Oh, wow.
When you factor it down to x plus y squared, you are allowing that mathematical molecule to release all its pent-up energy and settle into its ground state.
That's wild.
The energy just drops as the structure stabilizes.
That reframes so much of basic algebra for me. We aren't really solving things, we are cooling things down.
Exactly.
So now that we understand the ODE-CCT steps, you know, that these mathematical systems are desperately trying to collapse their entropy into stable states, let's look at what a successful thermodynamic reaction looks like.
A great simple starting point from the text is the equation x minus a squared equals zero.
Okay, a squared binomial set to zero. Now, the standard math view just says the answer is x equals a, and it's a double root. Moving on.
Right, boring.
Yeah. But how does this thermodynamic framework see it?
What's fascinating here is that this represents complete, perfect structural bonding.
Really?
Yeah. Because the term is squared, we are dealing with a bond multiplicity of two. In chemical terms, this is incredibly stable.
Okay.
It's akin to dimerization, where a molecule forms a strong double-layered bond with itself. Or, you know, like metal crystallization, where atoms fall flawlessly into a rigid lattice.
And because it equals zero, the thermodynamic reaction is just totally complete.
Yes.
Every single binding site is perfectly filled.
The system has hit what physicists call a global minimum.
A global minimum.
Right. Imagine a landscape of rolling hills and deep valleys. A global minimum is the absolute deepest valley possible. The ball rolls all the way to the bottom and stops completely.
The mathematical entropy has collapsed entirely to zero.
Exactly zero.
Okay, let's scale up the complexity slightly then. What happens when the equation is x minus a times a minus b equals zero?
Okay.
Now we have two separate factors multiplied together.
In our chemical translation, this is a chain reaction. You have two independent bonding events that could potentially happen.
Right.
But the crucial element holding this entire structure together is the constant, A.
Now, the notes refer to A here as a shared intermediate or a structural catalyst.
Yes.
This is where I get a bit tripped up, honestly. Mm. Because in actual biology or chemistry, a catalyst is a highly dynamic thing.
Right, it's active.
Yeah, an enzyme physically moves around, it grabs molecules, it bends them, it lowers the activation energy to force them together.
Yeah.
How can a static mathematical constant, literally just a fixed letter A, act as a catalyst? It's just sitting there on the page.
That's a great point. In physical biology, you're right, catalysts are active, moving actors. But in this mathematical framework, A is a structural catalyst.
Okay.
Don't picture a moving robot arm grabbing molecules. Picture a highly specific geometric mold.
A mold, like a physical cast that forces the other pieces into a specific shape.
Exactly. It provides a fixed geometric pathway. Because A is present in both factors, it creates a bridge. It allows the variable X and the variable B to relate to each other through their mutual relationship with that fixed shape of A. It's a structural chain. A leads to B, leads to C.
So the equation actually has a built-in architectural bridge that gives the components a pathway to find each other and bond.
Yes. And without that structural catalyst acting as an anchor, the components would just bounce off each other. The reaction couldn't proceed.
Here's where it gets really interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
We've walked through the ODE-CCT framework for stable equations. We've seen what it looks like when the math has an architectural bridge, when it behaves, and the entropy drops to zero.
Right.
So what happens when an equation is missing that bridge? Let's talk about the most famous unsolvable problem in history.
Fermat's last theorem.
Exactly. For integers, the equation is x cubed plus y cubed equals z cubed.
Ultimate unbondable reaction.
For over 350 years, no one could find a single whole number integer solution for any power greater than 2.
None.
And the source material claims this equation isn't just mathematically tricky, it is thermodynamically impossible.
That's a strong phrase.
It is. Walk me through the ODE-CCT analysis of why Fermat's last theorem simply explodes.
Well, when we run x cubed plus y cubed equals z cubed through the three steps of the framework, it fails catastrophically.
Go.
First, there is no shared intermediate. There is no structural catalyst like a mold we just talked about to bridge the left side of the equation to the right side.
None at all.
And second, there is no squared stabilization structure to anchor a global minimum.
It basically has no deepest valley to roll into.
Exactly.
But wait, let me put on my adversarial hat here for a second because I'm remembering my high school algebra.
Oh, boy. Okay.
I swear, there is a formula to factor the sum of two cubes. The left side of that equation, x cubed plus y cubed, does factor.
It does.
It breaks down into x plus y times x squared minus xy plus y squared.
Yep.
So why doesn't that count as bonding? I mean, the left side is clearly forming connections.
And that is the exact trap that confused mathematicians for centuries.
Really?
Yes. The left side of the equation absolutely factors. The reactants, x and y, are perfectly capable of forming a local bond with each other in that specific configuration.
Okay.
But remember, an equation is a strict reaction condition. Both sides must balance structurally.
So the left side bonds, but what about the right side?
Let's look at the geometry of what you just factored. Yeah. The left side breaks into two distinct mathematical pieces, right? A binomial multiplied by a trinomial, two pieces, but the target on the right side of the equation is z cubed.
Yeah.
A pure cube of a prime integer cannot be broken into a two-piece structure. It only breaks down into z times z times z, three pieces.
Oh, wow. I see the physical mismatch now. It's like the notes were saying. The left side of the equation forms a two-piece puzzle, like a glove.
Exactly.
But the right side is a three-piece puzzle slot. It's a mitten.
You are trying to jam a two-piece bonded structure into a three-piece geometric hole. It is a physical geometric impossibility.
That's crazy.
The valency exists. The parts are trying to connect, but the architectural pathways are fundamentally incompatible. There is simply no shared intermediate shape to bridge a two-factor structure to a three-factor target.
So if they physically cannot bond, what actually happens to the reaction under the ODE-CCT framework?
Well,
if I drop x cubed, oy cubed, and z cubed into my thermodynamic math beaker, what occurs?
We go all the way back to step one, entropy. Because there is no stable bonding pathway, the system can never find a global minimum. The entropy never collapses.
Right.
The mathematical temperature stays incredibly high, and the equation remains in a state of perpetual combinatorial oscillation.
Perpetual combinatorial oscillation, meaning it just endlessly shakes.
It is endlessly searching a structural void. It frantically tries combination after combination of integers, desperately trying to find a geometric configuration that balances so it can lower its energy.
But it can't.
No, because that bonding logic is absent. It just vibrates forever at a high energy state, never freezing into a solid root.
Man, if the reaction is perpetually oscillating, just endlessly vibrating and searching, it really makes me wonder about the second step of the framework, the work in energy phase.
What about it?
Let's say we had an infinitely powerful supercomputer.
Okay.
Could we just brute force this reaction? Like if we pumped infinite computational energy into the system, could we force x cubed plus y cubed to bond into z cubed?
If we connect this to the bigger picture of physical laws, the answer is a profound no.
Really?
Yeah, and this is a core insight of the entire chemical framework. The absence of a bonding pathway is geometric, not computational.
So it's not a matter of just trying harder or running a longer algorithm?
Not at all. Think about actual chemistry. No amount of heat, pressure, or raw energy can force a carbon atom to act exactly like an oxygen atom.
True.
Their internal geometric structures physically dictate what bonds they can form. For Fermat's last theorem, the failure is structural. To see why, we have to compare the geometry of a power of 2 against a power of 3.
Right, because if the exponent is 2, it's just the Pythagorean theorem.
Yeah.
X squared plus y squared equals z squared.
Exactly.
And we know that has infinite whole number of solutions. The classic 3-4-5 triangle.
Yeah.
So why does a power of 2 easily collapse its entropy, but a power of 3 oscillates forever?
Because a power of 2 represents a two-dimensional geometric structure, a circle.
Okay.
Think of a circle drawn on a graph. It has a single fixed center point. That center point acts as the perfect structural catalyst. It's the anchor.
Oh, we see.
It holds X and Y in a strict proportional relationship to each other, which perfectly bridges them to the radius Z.
The center of the circle is the architectural mold we talked about earlier.
Yes. But when you step up to N equals 3, you move from a 2D circle into a 3D sphere.
Right.
And a sphere does not provide that same strict, locked-in geometric pathway. The extra dimension allows the components to slide out of alignment.
Wow.
The geometric enzyme vanishes. No amount of infinite computational energy can change the underlying geometry of a sphere to make it act like a circle.
Hold on, I have to throw a wrench in this.
Bring it on.
Fermat's last theorem does have infinite solutions if we stop using whole number integers and start using real numbers. Decimals, fractions, irrationals.
True.
If the geometry of the sphere is fundamentally broken, why does the equation suddenly balance when we use real numbers?
This is where the thermodynamics of the ODE-CCT framework are incredibly precise. Thermodynamics and the way we are applying it to finding pure roots requires discrete quantized states.
Quantized states.
Right. Integers, you know, whole numbers are quantized. They are distinct, rigid energy levels.
Like distinct steps on a staircase. You're either on step 3 or step 4. You can't stand on step 3.14.
Exactly. Real numbers, however, form what we call a continuous manifold.
Okay, continuous manifold sounds a bit dense. Break that down for me.
Instead of a staircase with rigid steps, a continuous manifold is a perfectly smooth slide.
Okay.
There are no gaps. Because there are no gaps, you can slide down and find hyperspecific decimal points where the equation technically balances.
Right.
But, and this is crucial, those decimal solutions are just metastable islands.
Metastable. Meaning they look stable, but they aren't truly settled.
Right. If you put a ball on a smooth slide, you might be able to balance it perfectly for a moment with extreme precision. But it hasn't found a true deep structural valley to rest in.
It's just precarious.
Exactly. A true global minimum, where the structural entropy completely collapses into a permanent lattice, requires the rigid, locked-in geometry of integers. For Fermat's last theorem, that true integer ground state simply doesn't exist.
If whole number integers force equations into these rigid, failing structures, and real numbers offer these temporary, like, metastable balancing acts, it sounds like we aren't just talking about chemistry anymore.
What do you mean?
We are literally talking about states of matter. Are mathematical equations actually going through phase changes?
That is the exact logical conclusion of the source notes. We can actually build a thermodynamic phase diagram for mathematics.
Oh, that is so cool.
Different equations exist in different physical phases based entirely on their internal bonding stability.
I love this concept.
Yeah.
Let's map this phase diagram out based on everything we've covered.
Okay, let's do it.
If I have a fully solvable, perfectly balanced equation like the x minus a squared equals zero we discussed earlier, that has to be a solid. The bonds are rigid, the entropy has hit zero, it has found its deepest valley. It's basically mathematical ice.
It's a completely crystallized solid. Now, based on the framework, what is Fermat's last theorem for integers?
Well, FLT has no geometric bonding pathway. It has no shared intermediate. It is stuck in perpetual combinatorial oscillation, just violently shaking forever.
Yeah.
So it's a gas. It's a container of highly energetic particles, endlessly bouncing around, never able to freeze into a structure.
It is a pure mathematical gas. And the notes extend this mapping even further. Think about imaginary numbers.
Like roots that require the square root of a negative number.
Exactly. The source had a fascinating interpretation of this. Imaginary roots don't exist under normal conditions on the real number line.
Right.
They have to jump into a different phase entirely, the complex plane. So imaginary numbers are unstable isotopes.
Unstable isotopes.
Yes. They are radioactive. They rapidly oscillate between real and imaginary dimensions until they undergo a phase transition, much like a radioactive isotope decaying to reach stability.
This raises an important question. If we are fundamentally redefining mathematics, not just as a system of logical rules, but as physics, as structural thermodynamics and states of matter, what does that mean for how we approach unsolved problems moving forward?
It completely changes the burden of proof. Instead of infinitely searching for a number that fits, you map the theoretical space to see if a geometric bridge is even possible.
Wow.
Fermat's last theorem wasn't ultimately proven by checking every number on a supercomputer. It was proven by mapping the higher dimensional geometry and realizing there was absolutely no architectural bonding pathway.
So what does this all mean? For you listening right now, this deep dive represents a massive paradigm shift. Mathematics isn't just about shuffling abstract symbols around a chalkboard until you find the value of X.
Yeah.
It is about thermodynamics. It is about determining if an equation possesses the internal chemical bonding logic necessary to collapse its entropy and reach a stable physical state. It's about looking at a problem and asking, does the geometry of this system even allow for a solution to exist? Or am I trying to force a two-piece puzzle into a three-piece slot?
That's the real question.
And that brings me to a final thought I want to leave you with. We built this phase diagram of mathematics. We have mathematical solids equations that are perfectly solved, structurally sound, and frozen in place. And we have mathematical gases, impossible equations like FLT, that just perpetually oscillate in a cloud of high entropy because their internal geometry is broken. But what does a mathematical liquid look like?
Oh, that's a great question.
The source notes suggest that something like the Riemann hypothesis, arguably the most famous unsolved problem in math today, dealing with the hidden patterns of prime numbers, might just be a liquid.
A partially collapsed system.
Exactly. It's a thermodynamic system that is only partially collapsed. We know some of the bonding pathways. We can see the structure starting to form, but it hasn't completely frozen into a solid yet. It's still flowing, still settling.
That's a beautiful way to think about it.
So the next time you're staring down a massive, seemingly unsolvable problem, whether it's an impossible spreadsheet at work, a tangled coding project, or just a chaotic situation in your own life, stop trying to brute force the answer with raw energy.
Step back.
Right. Step back and ask yourself, is this problem a solid, a gas, or is it a liquid? Just waiting for you to find the right structural catalyst to finally freeze it into place.